So the White House announces that President Biden is going to the Middle East, and this becomes controversial. Let's talk about it. All right, Guy, what's going on?
All is well, as usual.
Good, good. All right. Talk about Saudi Arabia. Why is this such a controversial trip for Joe Biden? For decades, the United States has always had a very complex relationship with Saudi Arabia, going back decades. On the one hand, Saudi Arabia is one of our most important allies in the Middle East. On the other hand, complex history, going back very keen differences in values, political values. This has always been a very complex balancing act for American administrations as they try to balance between public perceptions of the Saudi kingdom and American interests in the Middle East.
Yeah, so look, I'd say it's not that complex in the sense that the American people don't have a warm spot in their heart for Saudi Arabia, but it's a very important strategic relationship for the United States, for the State Department, for America. So it's kind of it's an important ally that the American people don't like.
Okay, we had the Democratic debate just a year or so ago, a little bit not so long ago. And this is what President, or back then nominee Joe Biden, had to say.
Mr. Vice President, the CIA has concluded that the leader of Saudi Arabia directed the murder of U.S.-based journalist Jamal Khashoggi. The State Department also says the Saudi government is responsible for executing nonviolent offenders and for torture. President Trump has not punished senior Saudi leaders. Would you?
Yes, and I said it at the time. Khashoggi was, in fact, murdered and dismembered, and I believe in the order of the Crown Prince. And I would make it very clear, we were not going to, in fact, sell more weapons to them. We were going to, in fact, make them pay the price and make them, in fact, the pariah that they are. There's very little social redeeming value of the present government in Saudi Arabia.
And then he changes his mind.
Right. So the big question that is being analyzed, debated, is what pressure? So clearly Biden is responding to pressures at home. But the question has been, at least what I've seen, pressure from whom? Okay. So is it pressure from the general public that is struggling with high gas prices and everything else going into a national election for a few months? Or is it from Democratic donors in the American arms industries that is looking for a security deal between between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia, which is in the cards here.
All right, so let me interrupt you. And today we're going to talk about this question. We're going to talk about what does Biden want to get out of his Saudi visit? What do the Saudis want to gain from Biden's visit? And what this may mean for U.S.-Saudi relations and for the Middle East as a whole. So a little bit of background, okay? During the Obama administration, we see a major shift from the American perspective away from the Saudis and the so-called moderate Sunni nations, so Egypt, Jordan, nations like that, and towards the Qatari Turkish axis on the one hand, and towards Iran, which is Saudi Arabia's main rival in the area. So we see a shift in the American administration during the Obama years, away from Saudi Arabia and towards its two main rivals. Now we see the cards have shifted in the Middle East. New dynamics over the last 10 years from Obama to Trump and now to Biden. And Saudi Arabia is trying to position itself not only with the American administration, but with the American people and with its regional allies. So let's talk about Saudi Arabia and public opinion. If you look at public opinion polls from the last 2-3 decades, that the American people have been kind of cool, some cold towards the Saudis. They do not necessarily see the Saudis as a strong, dependable ally. They do not necessarily see the Saudis as allies who share American values, right? At the same time, the Saudis have always been there, pivotal for the Americans, not only in terms of oil prices, obviously one of the largest oil manufacturers in the world, but also in terms of geopolitics, right?
Yeah, so look, what the Saudis want is obviously a return to the pre-Obama relationship, and which they got under Trump. The question is, what makes them think that they can get this at this moment from the Biden administration?
Okay, so let's talk about Biden first. What does Biden really want? You were talking about the special interests and the weapons. I'm going to disagree with you. One word: inflation. We are going to a midterm election in November, and as James Carville said a few months ago, if inflation is going to be as high as it is, the Democrats are going to be smoked.
Right. So look, I'll join you in disagreeing with me, in the sense that, again, I think the idea that it's pressure from donors or the arms industry is not supported by the timing. These donors and arms manufacturers always wanted to deal with Saudi Arabia, but it's going to happen now, going into a very important election. So I think it's clear that that Biden is responding to the general public, to the voters, not the donors. The question is, in terms of his priorities, it seems to me that he has a different interest going into the 2022 election and a different interest going into the 2024 primaries, because the Democratic activists are
not too happy, right? And it's not Democratic activists. It's Democratic leadership in Congress. We have Elizabeth Warren. We have senators from all the spectrum, right? Not only the progressives, but the mainstream Democrats who are saying straight up, I mean, and we had a letter from 14 senators signed last week urging Biden not to normalize relations. We're kind of skipping ahead, but we have to talk about the catalyst. What led to President Biden calling Saudi Arabia a pariah? We kind of jumped ahead. We know this stuff, but just for the sake of the listeners, can we talk about the murder of the journalist?
Yeah, so when was it, like 5 years ago? This critic less than 5 years, Jamal Khashoggi, who is a journalist for the Washington Post and a critic of the Saudi regime, was lured into a meeting at the Turkish embassy, at the Saudi embassy in Turkey, I think, and murdered there in a very brutal way, which then the Turks released audio of it, and it was very damaging to Saudi Arabia.
And just for the note, he was an American citizen as well.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And from a very rich and important Saudi family. In any case, so that really gave the Saudi government a black eye after years of really trying to improve its public image in the world. And so there was this wholesale rejection by, first of all, the press, about press freedoms, but also all the other negative issues that Saudi Arabia has to deal with in terms of its PR.
Yeah, and especially within the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. I mean, we have, let's be honest, okay? I mean, the United States is dealing with a lot of actors all around the world. We hear, the United States is working with China. China does not necessarily have the best human rights record in the world.
Not only not the best, one of the worst.
One of the worst. I mean, so there are a lot of problematic issues around human rights, but this specific issue, the murder of a journalist, really put Saudi Arabia on the blacklist, or right, the no-go list for the for many people in the Democratic Party. And now that Biden wants to go there and normalize his relationship with Mohammed bin Salman, right, the crown prince, a lot of Democrats especially are saying, hey, this is not the right thing to do.
Right. One correction, I think, is that it's not so much the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, but rather the idealist wings of all sectors of the American society, in the sense that there are Democrats and Republicans who think that we have to deal with the world as it is, which I think is what you're aiming towards here. And there are others who say that, no, we should put values, shared values, as a guiding principle for foreign policy. I think that's that element of more idealism, but values is a guiding light in on both wings.
That's absolutely true, right? I mean, and the normative approach to international relations works really well on Twitter. It works really well on social media. It works really well in fundraisers. Where it doesn't work really well is international relations. I mean, if you look historically, and this has been a criticism of U.S. policy, right? U.S. policy has often put the short-term immediate needs ahead of the right thing to do, right? But what I think President Biden is learning right now is that life looks very different when you are running for president than when you are a U.S. president who has to fix real-world problems in the real world. And that's when you have to go and retract on your promises from the campaign trail and go and meet Mohammed bin Salman. And potentially, despite the fact that Biden actually said he's not going to meet bin Salman just a few days ago, I'm going to predict he is going to meet with bin Salman because this has to do with what the Saudis want out of this visit. Right. The Saudis want, in my opinion, several things, but chief among them, they want the photo op. They want the photo op of President Biden shaking the hand of Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman and legitimizing his stance as a leader in the Middle East and in the world.
Right. I think, as you said earlier, Saudi Arabia has two goals here. One is an immediate goal, geopolitical goal, to protect the Arab world and Sunni Islam from Iran's religious influence and military power. That's one thing. And that's easier to get. The other thing it wants is legitimacy. Okay, Salman's vision for Saudi Arabia is basically what we all see in the Gulf states. Modern society, tech, banking, finances, fashion, et cetera, et cetera. And countries that the West, Western people are comfortable with going and visiting and accepting their money and accepting their logo and flag and everything else. And so the Saudi royal house wants that for Saudi Arabia, while also protecting the Wahhabi version of Islam that it champions. And that's something that the Gulf states are not that good at.
Okay. Well, you know, I think we ought to spend just a few minutes talking about Mohammed bin Salman and who he is and how he came to power and what he's trying to do. Because I think a lot of people in the West are not familiar with this really, really interesting geopolitical character that came to our world 4 or 5 years ago, right? Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince, he is the de facto leader of Saudi Arabia. Now, he's trying to navigate something quite complicated. On the one hand, he's trying to reform Saudi Arabia and make it something that's beyond an oil-rich country. So, as you said, opening it up to technology, international finance, very similar to what the United Arab Emirates have been able to do, right? A hub for international business. Think about Dubai, right? In all their attempts with cryptocurrency and Formula One in Bahrain. And, you know, so what the Gulf states are doing. On the other hand, Mohammed bin Salman is operating in one of the most conservative countries on earth. You mentioned Wahhabi Islam, right? Now, for folks who don't have background in the region, Saudi Arabia was formed post-colonial by, you know, French and British cutting up the Middle East and creating all of these countries. And Saudi Arabia really is an alliance between the clergy, the Wahhabist clergy of Saudi Arabia, which is a sect of Islam, which is very, very traditional, right? Yeah. And the Saudi family.
Very dominant, very strong.
And the Saud family, right? So we're talking about one of the most conservative countries on earth. And now Bin Salman comes in and he's trying to bring forward reform. A lot of people, when they think about Saudi Arabia, they think about women's rights. And this is a place where we kind of have to think about Bin Salman and the tightrope that he's trying to walk on. On one hand, recognizing the traditional nature of his nation and the power structure again, and on the other hand, his wish to open up Saudi Arabia to the rest of the world. So, in the last couple of years, we heard about women being able to drive in Saudi Arabia. This was something new. This is something Bin Salman brought forward. Also, integrating women into the workplace. He recognized that you don't want to lose 50% of your workforce and economic advantages of this. And then we see other ways he's trying to open up, which may seem like no big deal to people in the West, but the introduction of a new golf league.
Yeah, so look, when you said about the photo op with Biden, as you said, we all understand that Biden doesn't have to travel all the way to Saudi Arabia, be in the room with Salman, shake his hand, and essentially say, "Hey, Saudi Arabia is a good country. Don't kind of rag on it." But the need here is for Salman to have Biden come and show the people with his very actions that Saudi Arabia is forgiven, legitimized, allowed into the family of nations, and that's where all this other stuff comes in. You know, this PR blitz, which is Saudi Arabia funds with billions of dollars research centers all in universities, good universities all over the world. It has
as do the Chinese and the Turks and many other nations.
It's a known thing of again public diplomacy, as you always say. Mm-hmm. It hosts one of the big Formula One races in Saudi Arabia as well. And now this new golf tour, which those of you who are into golf, I'm sure know very well about, it basically created a competing tour to the PGA, and it is spending unbelievable amounts of money on it in an effort to get golf viewers to watch golf. There are no commercials on it. Okay, so it's a better golfing experience. They're hoping to lure not so much the big stars of today, but the stars of tomorrow, the ones who really want this untold amounts of cash. They're trying to get a tennis tournament, an ATP tennis tournament in Saudi Arabia, especially not so much the men. They want the women, the WTA.
And it brings it back to the tightrope that Bin Salman is walking. Integrating traditional society, the Wahhabi power dynamic, power structure within his own nation, and his wish to open up Saudi Arabia. And this is why we bring it back to the question of, having a foreign policy that holds the high ground versus having a realistic American foreign policy, which recognizes that every nation has its own internal domestic political limitations, and you have to work with other nations who don't share your values. Yeah. This is a real thing. And, when Elizabeth Warren sits, on Twitter or, on Capitol Hill and gives everybody grades and tries to hold the high moral ground, I ask her again, I challenge her, why is it okay for the United States to, warm relations with Iran, where the Ayatollahs are doing much worse things, right? To many more journalists, right? I mean, I'm not condoning the murder, obviously, of Khashoggi, but we see that Turkey, they're oppressing journalists, Dan Wright. So I'm going to argue again that the United States has to engage Saudi Arabia. They're a key player, not just because of oil, but because of what is happening geopolitically in the Middle East since the Obama administration's pivot towards Asia. And let's talk about that real quick.
Yeah. Well, look, just about that, though, I think that of the two things that Saudi Arabia wants from Biden, from America, actually the practical thing of moving away from the Iran nuclear deal, pivoting back from Iran towards the Sunni traditional allies of the United States, that's something that Biden can more easily do than giving Iran, giving Saudi Arabia legitimacy and forgiveness, et cetera. Because A, Iran Obama considered it a good bet. Now, even in Democratic circles, even in Obama circles, they can see Iran is not as good a bet. It's not as stable. It's not as open to the West as Saudi Arabia. And so it's easy to pivot back to Saudi Arabia. The forgiveness is very, even if Biden did say, I forgive you, and shook his hand and say, Saudi Arabia is a good country. It won't murder any more journalists. It's not within Biden's power to grant this legitimacy. Yeah.
Photo op can be enough, right? I mean, just him shaking hands, he doesn't have to say anything. That will do the trick. That will be on the cover of every single magazine. And guess what? Al Arabiya and the Saudi government-sponsored media is going to push it, and it's all good.
That's true. The question is whether ABC News and the entertainment industry, basically, look, the legitimacy that it wants is from people like you and me.
It wants the New York Times, but again, you know, will the New York Times deny the Saudis this handshake while at the same time, right, giving credence or giving support for the Iran deal or for the U.S. to engage Venezuela in order to get cheaper oil? Right, let's talk about the Middle East and the rebalance. Right. So during the Obama administration, we have the famous pivot towards Asia. The United States is basically not interested in getting involved. And you know what? After Iraq and Afghanistan during the Bush years, I don't blame Obama. Right. The American people don't want to lose a single soldier in the Middle East. They have no interest over there. I don't blame them. I get it. But when the United States, during the Obama administration, reaches out, shake the hand of Iran with the Iran deal, when it pivot towards the Qatari and the Turks, who are the rivals of Saudi Arabia and Egypt, now there is a new rebalancing of alliances in the Middle East. And the most clear example of this rebalancing are the Abraham Accords that took place during the Trump administration. Suddenly we have nations such as the UAE and Bahrain, and countries like Morocco and Sudan, and sign peace deals with Israel.
Right. So Saudi Arabia is not part of the Abraham Accords, but the reason why the Abraham Accords happened with all these other countries, from Jordan to Morocco to the Emirates, mm-hmm. is Saudi Arabia's imprimatur to
and
go ahead and
blessing.
Do
absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Look, listen. The UAE would have never done it without Saudi blessing, right? So
right.
Recognizing that the United States is not going to be there to support Saudi Arabia and its allies in its longstanding Cold War with Iran, right? And all the proxy wars in Yemen, in Syria, in Iraq, all around the region, we see the Saudis rebalancing, creating new alliances with its rivals, Israel, and more recently, in the last year, we see a meeting between Ben Salman and Erdogan of Turkey. Yeah. These rivals are reaching out to one another, and there's one reason for it. They understand the need to create strategic alliances in the absence of a dominant U.S. role in the region.
So I'd say two things. First, you're right. You know that, especially during the Obama years, less so under Trump because the U.S. was more engaged.
Trump gave Bin Salman a warm hug.
Yeah, no, So I'm saying that, especially during the Obama years, there was this warming between Saudi Arabia and Israel, and Saudi Arabia was creating a coalition, an informal coalition between America's old traditional allies, Israel, Jordan, the Gulf states, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, in order to counter Iran, in order to do something in case the U.S. won't be a part of it. But, okay, that's one part of it. I think the other meaning of the Abraham Accords is part of that image reform with the sports and the universities and everything else.
Soft power. Mm-hmm.
And that is to try to influence, to show the American people or Western people, again, this modernization, whether it's on women or on Israel and Jews, et cetera, that to get the American people to warm up, to change its view of Saudi Arabia and not see it as a malign force or a dark force in the Middle East, but an agent of peace. Look,
and an ally. But listen, international public opinion is fickle, it's policy dependent, and it's very much influenced by the elite media coverage. And we know this for years across administrations, both Democrat and Republican. Let's start finishing up because we're running out of time. Let's do a couple of bets. Will Biden meet Bin Salman despite the fact that he promised not to just a few days ago?
Yes.
I say yes also. So Bin Salman will get the photo op. How will the Democratic establishment receive this?
The Democratic establishment will be fine with it. The Democratic kind of activist wing will be upset by it. But as they say, it's not a saying in English, but you deal with what's first and what's later. The most important thing for Biden now is the current election. He'll deal with the fallout for the
midterm election
later on.
Okay, very good. And I want to pose one last question to anybody in the world of policymaking and all of that, right? And that is, what role does the United States want to play in the Middle East, right? If the answer is we don't want to play a role, don't be surprised if your traditional allies are going to form new strategic alliances, and oftentimes they're going to do it with people that we don't necessarily like. So this is something to keep in mind.
The United States, clearly Americans see the United States as having a role everywhere, okay? And even people who are hands-off. So I don't think it's so much of whether the U.S. will have a role in the United States, but in the power structure within in the Middle East, which side will the United States support? Now, whether it will support this much, this much or this much, that's a different question. But I think the big question isn't whether to have a policy or not, but who will be which team will the United States be on?
That's a great question, and that's something we'll find out in the coming weeks, months, and year. All right, we want to wish President Biden all the best on his visit to the Middle East. Let's see if there's the photo op. Let's see what the fallout is going to be domestically and in the news media, especially. It's going to be interesting to me. And for everybody who's listened today, thanks so much for tuning in. Please subscribe, like, share, and all that good stuff. For Guy and Guy, have a great day. Hear from the Public Diplomat. We appreciate you every single time. Bye.